on the track. Organic food was in the markets, no GMOs upon the racks. And all the billionaires had to learn how to share. Bill Gates was told to quit his whining when he said it wasn't fair. And his mansion became a collective.
This is the Quality News Network. The Supreme Court today upheld most of a controversial Texas redistricting map that was promoted by Republicans. It shifted power from Democrats to Republicans. Some experts say the ruling will allow other states to draw new lines more often than once a decade, as is the tradition. In the Middle East, Syria has reportedly fired on Israeli warplanes flying over the president's residence. One official reportedly said Israel wanted to assassinate Hamas's Syria-based political chief, who officials believe is tied to an Israeli soldier's recent abduction. In Gaza, the Israelis have launched a ground offensive in addition to air raids to win the hostages' release. The airstrikes have knocked out most power, water, and bridges in the area. Three Palestinian groups have claimed responsibility for seizing the soldier. In Iraq, 11 Sunni insurgent groups say they will stop their attacks on the condition that the U.S. military leaves the country within 2 years. But President Nouri al-Maliki says it does not make sense to set a timetable because he doesn't know if Iraqi forces will be able to take over security by then. In Russia, President Vladimir Putin has ordered Russian agents to find and destroy those responsible for the recent killings of four Russian diplomats in Iraq. A group linked to al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for killing the men. In Moscow, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is expected to join international talks on Iran's nuclear program. She arrived there today from Afghanistan, where she said the U.S. will continue to support President Hamid Karzai and the fight against Taliban militants. On Capitol Hill, the House has approved $2 million in aid to salmon fishermen whose season was cut short in April. That's when restrictions were placed on commercial fishing to protect the endangered Chinook salmon. Also on Capitol Hill, the House is expected to debate whether to condemn the media for reports that detail secret intelligence programs used in the war on terror. House Speaker Dennis Hastert stated that, quote, loose lips kill Americans. On Cape Canaveral, Florida, Saturday's scheduled launch of the space shuttle Discovery may be delayed. Officials say there's a 60% chance that storms and thick clouds will prevent the takeoff. Across the eastern seaboard, flooding has led to at least 10 deaths. From the Virginia coast to upstate New York, rising rivers have forced the evacuation of tens of thousands of residents. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Senate today approved the nomination of Goldman Sachs head Henry Paulson as the next Treasury Secretary. And the Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates to 5.25% when its meeting concludes tomorrow. That would be the 17th successive hike since June 2004. A new survey finds that most retirees in the U.S. will not receive health benefits from their employers. 95% of the companies surveyed say they plan to reduce that coverage over the next 5 years, while 14% will eliminate it entirely. Honda says it will build a new $500 million assembly plant in Indiana. It will have 2,000 workers and make 200,000 vehicles each year. Nokia is suing two Chinese companies claiming they copied their mobile phone design. China is now Nokia's largest market, with sales totaling $4 billion. FBI agents in New York City area have broken up two international movie piracy rings. Bootlegging has reportedly cost the motion picture industry millions of dollars. CNNMoney.com says the next generation of iPods may be delayed because of the switch in chip makers. The new Nano may now be pushed back until December. Music giants EMI and Warner Music are still discussing a merger. This comes as each company recently rejected a takeover bid made by the other. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 49 points, NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Round about these parts, it's Wednesday evening. I'm Bob Kincaid, and Wednesday evenings being Wednesday evenings, well, it's a special time of the week for us. While the freaks of the religion industry are off handling snakes and drinking strychnine, here at Head On, well...
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Precisely. It is, in fact, prayer meeting night at Head On. And instead of jumping right into the overtly prayer meeting-oriented stories, I want to go straight to the phones because it may be just early evening here, but in Great Britain... It's after midnight, and a gentleman by the name of David Rose, author of Guantanamo, The War on Human Rights, has kindly agreed to stay up late and join us on the program. Mr. Rose, are you there, sir?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening, or good morning, and thank you very much for joining us on the program. Let's jump right to the chase. This book you've written, Guantanamo, it's based, is it not, on an assignment you originally did for Vanity Fair. Is that correct?
Well, it came out of an assignment I did for Vanity Fair. That's correct. I went to Guantanamo a couple of years ago and spent most of a week there. But then after that, I was able to interview 8 of the 9 British detainees who had been at Guantanamo and who have been released over the last couple of years. And I continued staying in touch with the story. As a matter of fact, I tried to get down to Guantanamo 2 weeks ago. I was in the air on my way from London to Washington on the Sunday 2 weeks ago, planning to travel there the following day for one of these military commission tribunals that are supposedly taking place there. While I was in the air, the news broke of the suicides of 3 prisoners, and my clearance to enter Guantanamo and the flight I'd been due to take from Andrews Air Force Base were abruptly cancelled. I spent the rest of the next day getting new clearance from Guantanamo and fixing up rather elaborate arrangements to fly to Gitmo, which involved hiring a private plane from Jamaica. I was just about to check in for the private plane the day after that when the manager of the private plane company in Kingston, Jamaica, got a phone call from the Pentagon saying, Mr. Rose cannot travel to Guantanamo after all. We are clearing the base of all reporters. And, of course, the reason was they didn't want any difficult questions asked about these deaths.
Well, Mr. Rose, you have... I'm sorry, I've got the stutters. It seems that you have rather extensive and intimate knowledge, as far as I can tell, perusing the book, of what has gone on down there. Of course, after you mentioned these suicides. After the suicides took place, of course, American officials came out and described it as some sort of tantrum what was the phrase, asymmetrical warfare, whatever in the world that means. You've seen these conditions. If you were in the same or similar circumstances, might you be so motivated as well?
Well, I've been a reporter for over 25 years, and most of my career I've done a lot of coverage of crime, criminal justice, those kinds of issues. I've been in a lot of prisons. As a matter of fact, I visited death row in a couple of states in America, in Georgia and Louisiana, and I can tell you without any question that conditions in Guantanamo are much harsher than I have ever seen anywhere in the world. On death row, for example, there is air conditioning, there is TV, there is visitation from family members, from attorneys, and of course people on death row, when everyone thinks of the death penalty, at least they know why they're there. At least they've had some kind of trial, and they also have, of course, rights of appeal. They have due process. In Guantanamo, they are held in cells which are roughly the size of a queen-size bed, which contain just a metal cot and a mattress, a foam mattress that's about an inch and a half thick. And they're in those cells for 24 hours a day, except for two periods of exercise, which last about 20 minutes twice a week. And in that 20 minutes, they've also got to fit in their twice-weekly shower as well.
In that same time period?
I'm sorry?
In that same time period?
That's right. So they've got 10 minutes for a shower, 10 minutes to walk around. There's no air conditioning. The temperature in Gitmo in the middle of the day through most of the year is well into the 90s. It's still extremely hot at night. But, of course, as well as that, these people, most of them, really don't know why they're there. The U.S. has claimed that they're terrorists, but most of them don't fit that definition in any shape or form. Many of them were purchased from the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, essentially for bounties of $5,000 that were being offered at the time. And they've never been able to confront the evidence against them. They've never been charged with any kind of crime. They've never been able to confront any evidence. And worse still, they have absolutely no idea when, if ever, they might go home. Well, it's not surprising in those circumstances, but many of them have suffered very seriously from mental health problems. The Red Cross began reporting way back in the middle of 2002 that there was a very high rate of depression and anxiety amongst Guantanamo inmates. There had been so many suicide attempts by the middle of 2003, about 40 at that point, 40 serious suicide attempts, that the camp authorities decided to reclassify attempts at hanging or other methods of self-harm as what are called manipulative self-injurious behaviors. Now, there's no figures published on how many of these so-called manipulative self-injurious behaviors they may be, but it's quite clear that suicide attempts have continued to run at a high rate. And indeed, at least a fifth of the camp, when I was there 2 years ago, were, according to the camp medical staff, taking antidepressants such as Prozac. So to call this an act of asymmetric warfare, I personally find it just grotesque. The idea that these people who had families, they had kids, two of them, lives which they thought reasonably they might never rejoin, the idea that this was some act to hurt the U.S., it's just crazy. Sure, they coordinated their deaths. It's clear they all wanted to die at the same time because they thought that that would have the greatest impact. But as far as I can see, the evidence suggests that they did this out of despair, not as an act of terrorism.
This astonishes me, Mr. Rose. My government's lost its mind.
Yeah, well, I think it has.
I'm not trying to be flip or facetious. I can't conceive of a circumstance under which anyone with any sort of, the Republican right in this country spends a lot of time talking about morality and religion and values, and this is the logical outgrowth of that?
Well, it does seem to be. Of course, I mean, I think your comment is very appropriate, because apart from anything else, Guantanamo has not actually helped fight the war on terror at all. I mean, I think there are enormous moral and indeed constitutional and international legal arguments against Guantanamo. But just as a strategy to try and defeat terrorism, it is totally counterproductive. I think the first point here is that none of the really serious terrorist leaders who have been captured since September 11, 2001, people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the planner of 9/11, Abu Zubaydah, the Al-Qaeda operations chief, none of these real terrorist players have ever been near Guantanamo Bay. They've been held in secret CIA facilities, nobody knows where.
Poland, Romania.
maybe Romania, maybe Poland, some have said Thailand, some have suggested floating prisons in the Indian Ocean. I mean, I personally think there's a very strong case for putting these individuals on trial, and as far as I can see, the only reason they haven't been put on trial, and I've spoken to 9/11 victims' families who very much would like to see them on trial, the only reason they haven't been is that they've been tortured so badly that even the U.S. can't actually take the risk of giving them a trial. But the people at Guantanamo fall into a completely different category. As far as I can see, there is nobody there. I mean, even according to the documents that the U.S. government itself has filed against them for these kind of kangaroo court military commissions, none of them have committed serious acts of terrorism. None of them have ever been involved in fully worked out terrorist attacks. But beyond that, the intelligence that's been gathered from Guantanamo, I interview for my book a number of senior intelligence officials, one of whom had just retired and went on the record, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Cristino, who in 2003-04 had access to most of the interrogation records and intelligence product that it's called from Guantanamo. And he said that the claims the Pentagon was making about the value of the information there were just completely exaggerated. His exact words were that intelligence from Guantanamo had not prevented a single terrorist attack or helped to prevent a single terrorist attack anywhere in the world. Now, beyond that, of course, there's another effect of Guantanamo, which is that it is a fantastically effective recruiting sergeant for international terrorism. The images shown again and again and again on TVs or TV stations around the world of people kneeling in the dust in orange jumpsuits, being brutalized by guards, and the stories that emerge every month of, well, today's LA Times, for example, the
right.
Descriptions of people cutting themselves using the wire mesh in their cells. This is a fantastically potent tool for Al-Qaeda.
Well, may I ask you a question? Obviously, it's an interview. Is it fair, based on the fact that everyone here, everyone in Guantanamo, seems to be of either an identical ethnicity or an identical religion, and that they are held without charge, and that they are held indefinitely... Mr. Rose, why has the world not started calling Guantanamo what it is, a concentration camp?
Well, I think it has to some extent outside the United States. I mean, I'm very struck by how much more awareness there is now in America of the true nature of Guantanamo and indeed the true nature of some of the other human rights abuses that have been carried out over the last few years. I think there is a far greater awareness of that now than there was, say, 2 years ago. But in the rest of the world, in fact, I think criticism of Guantanamo has been very vociferous. A number of British cabinet ministers have been very outspoken, especially lately, about it. Lord Goldsmith, our Attorney General, has said that it should close, that it's an outrage. Some of the another cabinet minister last week, the Lord Chancellor, the head of the House of Lords, he made similar comments. The Prime Minister, Tony Blair, in fact, although he's not been so strong in his use of language, he said it is, as he puts it, an anomaly and should close. So, I think in the rest of the world, people do see this as something. I mean, they rub their eyes in disbelief. And indeed, when it first opened and I saw those pictures for the first time, I thought, this can't be happening. You know, this is America. I mean, first of all, I had not.
Well, if this was
based in Cuba, but
right. But if this was being done by any other country on the face of the planet, it would be referred to as a concentration camp, or a death camp, or an ethnic cleansing camp.
Yes, it would. I think that's absolutely right. I think
it strikes me that at some point in time, the United States must become subject, if not to international law, then at the very least, Mr. Rose, to international vocabulary.
Well, I think it will. I mean, my hope and my belief is that the American Constitution is ultimately strong enough, and the values that it actually conveys in the United States are strong enough, that a few years from now, Guantanamo and some of the other things that have happened in this war on terror, so-called, will be seen as a terrible stain on the history of America, just as the internment of Japanese Americans was during the Second World War, and indeed as McCarthyism was in the 1950s. Clearly, we haven't got to that stage yet, but I'm optimistic that eventually, the pendulum will swing to that extent, and people will look at Guantanamo in horror and disbelief within America, as they are beginning to do so in the rest of the world now.
The thing that scares me, though, sir, is the fact that it seems like the United States is very good at recognizing its mistakes in hindsight. We're not so good at not letting it happen again. Guantanamo, and tell me if you disagree or agree, Guantanamo sets the scene for a lot of other things. I'm looking at a story right now from last week headlined, GOP Candidate Calls for Labor Camp. And this is a candidate for governor in Arizona, a nephew of Barry Goldwater, who wants to put so-called illegal aliens in tent cities with barbed wire around them on the Mexican border and compel them to build a fence.
Wow. Well, yes, I suppose that it kind of lowers the gold standard. If Guantanamo is seen as normal and acceptable, then that kind of behavior and treatment starts to become seen as acceptable for other people who are regarded in one way or another as undesirable. I think maybe one of the most important things is actually going to happen tomorrow morning. It's widely expected that tomorrow the Supreme Court is going to rule in the case of this guy Hamdan, who is in Guantanamo. He's a Guantanamo prisoner, and he's accused of being Osama bin Laden's driver. Well, he admits that. He said, yeah, he was a poor Yemeni with a family to feed, and he answered an advertisement from a rich Saudi Arabian who wanted a driver, and so he became Osama bin Laden's driver. But that was it. He was not a terrorist. He had no sympathy for terrorism. Well, he's facing trial by military commission, but he's challenged the constitutionality of this military commission process. And tomorrow the Supreme Court will announce its decision as to whether these military commissions are constitutional. Well, if they decide that they are not constitutional, that is clearly going to have an immense impact. It's basically going to say that this whole Guantanamo experiment with these trials, supposedly at the kind of pinnacle of the experiment, are a violation of the U.S. Constitution, and I think that will be sending an extremely clear signal. If, on the other hand, they rule the other way, I think the consequences will be very serious, and, yeah, we might expect to see tent cities and chain gangs all along the Rio Grande.
And, well, given the makeup of the current Supreme Court, Mr. Rose, do you have any realistic expectations that this might be struck down?
I don't know. If I were a betting man, and I'm not, I think I would actually nudge towards thinking that it may be struck down. I just received an email from a well-informed observer half an hour ago saying that apparently Justice Stevens has written the lead opinion. Well, if that's the case, then it looks like they may be about to strike it down.
Well, Justice Stevens wouldn't be writing the lead opinion for anything that Scalia or Alito or Roberts or Thomas had a hand in, so... I hope you're right. I don't want to give away too much of the content of your book, Mr. Rose, because I would like for people to actually buy it and read it. But can you share, I mean, you've told us a little bit about and can we call them cages, what these men are kept in? These aren't cells. These are cages, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they are really. They're made of, the walls are made of wire mesh. They're, as I say, extremely small. They are really extraordinary. You get a kind of... They're prefabricated. They're structures made by Halliburton's subsidiary KBR, formerly Kellogg Brown and Root.
The same people who made the tiger cages in Vietnam.
Yeah, and of course Vice President Cheney's former corporation. Interestingly enough on that, just as an aside here, they keep building more cages at Gitmo, even though the number of prisoners has slightly fallen. And, of course, they're all being made by KBR. So it's good to know that Halliburton's shareholders are continuing to do well out of Gitmo, even if the number of detainees has fallen somewhat from its peak. But, yeah, the cells are extremely basic, and they contain an Asian-style toilet, a hole in the floor. And the only faucet in the cells is very low. It's about a foot above this, above the hole. It doubles as the kind of toilet flushing mechanism. So it means that if a detainee wants to get a drink, he's basically got to kneel in the toilet just to get a drink of water. The water that comes out of the faucet is yellow. It comes from a desalination plant, which doesn't seem to function very well because it's slightly salty. If they're being denied what are called comfort items, what most people might consider basic items that are fundamental to human existence, such as, for example, a cup. That's the only way they're going to be able to get a drink, because, you know, obviously without a cup, you're going to have to drink straight out the faucet. The Pentagon, by the way, says that these faucets are so low to, it's beautiful, this, accommodate Muslim foot-washing needs.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Before the call to prayer, Muslims are supposed to wash their feet. So that's how they explain what is, of course, you know, just another example of the kind of harassment they go through. And of course, they've got really nothing to do in there. I mean, it's no wonder they go crazy. They have a copy of the Quran. They have these orange overalls. You can imagine after two or three days in between showers.
In Cuba.
Yeah, in that heat, no air conditioning, what kind of state people are in. If they're compliant, if they do exactly what their captors want, then they can have access to things like backgammon games and a few novels. But even the novels, they censor. I was interviewing one former detainee, and he said that at one stage he was allowed to get a Scott Turow novel, but they'd torn out about 100 pages because 100 pages of this novel was somehow deemed to be dangerous or subversive. I mean, this is the kind of crazy law.
Oh, because it describes some level of American legal process.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you mentioned already that it's like a concentration camp. I mean, this is a bit like Stalinist Russia, you know.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm beginning to wonder, Mr. Rose, this is so Kafkaesque. Am I going to wake up in the morning and I'm a cockroach? This is disturbing in the extreme. What is there? Is there? I mean, are we so high and mighty in the United States that no amount of pressure will bring this to an end?
Well, I think what will bring it to an end in the end is pressure from within the United States. I mean, one of the things that depressed me very much was that John Kerry did not utter the words Guantanamo Bay once during the 2004 election campaign.
No.
I don't hear too many Democrat challengers using the phrase as they campaign for the midterms now. But I do think, I mean, that is how it will close. It will close if Americans really wake up to what's going on in their name and demand from their government that it should close. You know, maybe that will happen before too long. I just don't know.
Would the people of the UK ever tolerate something like this out of their government?
Well, it's interesting. We had something on a far smaller scale. We had this system of essentially arbitrary detention in a maximum security prison for terrorist suspects who were not deemed, against whom there was not enough evidence to charge in a criminal court. And that was struck down by our Supreme Court, by the House of Lords judges, about 18 months ago. And they substituted that, they substituted a new system of what they called control orders, whereby suspects, again, who there was not enough evidence to bring proper criminal charges against, were effectively put under house arrest. They had to wear electronic tags that recorded their every movement. They had incredibly restricted conditions, like they were only allowed out of their houses 1 or 2 hours a day and only allowed to go, you know, half a mile from their house, that kind of thing. Anyway, those control orders were struck down just earlier today by the High Court in London. So the courts have not tolerated this kind of thing, and indeed there has been a great deal of political opposition to them too.
Well, where the United States is concerned, in your analysis, is this the sort of thing? Is the Bush administration's usage of Guantanamo? Does it have an element of sort of a two-pronged attack? They get a two-for-one. They get a concentration camp, and they get an opportunity to directly assault most of the most long-held, cherished American legal values that are out there, habeas corpus and whatnot. Is that part of this?
Well, in my opinion, it is. I think Guantanamo has to be seen in a wider context. I believe that from September 11th onwards, the Bush administration gave free rein to an agenda which has always, for a number of years, lurked inside the conservative movement in America, which is this idea of the so-called unitary executive, of a presidency which is not one of three equal partners in the Constitution with the courts and the Congress, but superior to the other two, that can override the decisions, ignore the votes in Congress and decisions of the courts. And September 11th, I think, gave the Bush administration this opportunity because of the powers that the presidency has, the president has as commander-in-chief. I do think that there is, with that also, is an agenda that runs in the conservative movement against the idea of international law and against constitutional restrictions in general. And you see this thinking put forward very clearly in the torture memos which emerged in the administration a couple of years ago, in which it was stated explicitly that it would be unconstitutional for the Congress to in any way restrict the president's ability to conduct a war, including restrictions on the treatment of detainees who are being interrogated, including the use of torture or inhuman and degrading treatment. You see the same thing in the use of unlawful, unconstitutional wiretapping powers of with emails and phone calls, and now we learned from the New York Times last week, banking records.
Right.
And then there's this excellent article, I don't know if you've seen it, in the New York Review of Books a couple of weeks ago by Elizabeth Drew, who looks at all these occasions, 750 of them, where the president has written these memos on acts of Congress saying, basically, I'm going to ignore this. I don't believe that this actually binds me to do something. I'm just going to ignore this law. So I think Guantanamo fits in that broader context. I'm very struck by a book which was written by the prominent neoconservative and former Assistant Secretary of Defense, Chairman of the Defense Policy Board in the early part of the Bush administration, Richard Perle, and David Frum, the former White House speechwriter who wrote The Axis of Evil speech. Their book is called An End to Evil, How to Win the War on Terror. And in the last section of that book, they paint this picture of a world that was at peace with freedom and freedom of speech and, you know, benign, harmonious working between nations.
And sunshine and violets.
Yeah. Exactly. And they say this will come apart. This will come about not through the United Nations or international law, which are totally discredited, corrupt institutions, but through the application of American armed might. And I think that's a very clear statement of that kind of neoconservative project.
To kill our way to peace.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you one last question. I've kept you up long enough, Mr. Rosen. I really do appreciate you joining us. There's one group that we have not contemplated in this discussion thus far, and that is the soldiery that are assigned to Guantanamo. Now, those are almost exclusively Marines. Do you think that this extracts a toll on them?
There's no question about it. Actually, they were Marines in the early days. They've had all kinds of units there. I mean, there's quite a lot of the Navy there at the moment. They've had, really, right across the whole range. What they have in common, most of the people down there, is that they're very largely, 70-80% of them, Reserve and National Guard. So what you have is people who have been, you know, taken out of normal lives in America with families and jobs and all kinds of commitments and responsibilities, and bang, they're in Gitmo for 12 months. And they're told that they're guarding the world's most dangerous terrorists, though in fact they're not. And they are actually living themselves in pretty harsh conditions. There's very little to do. The weather is very hot and humid the whole year round. Well, there's one little beach and they can go snorkeling, but I think the attraction of that does start to pull after a while. It's pretty tough for them there. There's no question about it.
Well, I can't help but think that we already know that people are coming home from the Iraq War, and I would assume from Gitmo, in no good shape. PTSD is on the rise. And somewhere along the way, any country that does something like Guantanamo, whether it be because of another conquering army, or in fact, call it karma, or destiny, fate, retribution, we pay for it somewhere along the way. And I can't help but think that there is going to be a terrible price for the likes of Guantanamo.
I think you're right.
Mr. Rose, David Rose, thank you very kindly for joining us. Thank you for staying up late. I hope maybe we can help you sell a few more books. But more importantly, I hope that we can help you to get a very, very important piece of reportage out there and help bring this to an end.
Thank you very much indeed.
Have a great morning.
Cheers. Cheers.
Take care. Bye. David Rose, author of Guantanamo, The War on Human Rights. And again, I didn't want to get into a lot of the meat and potatoes of the book because you deserve that horror all for yourself. American, international, whatever nationality you are, this is a, Stephen King? Screw Stephen King. Curl up with this and this is worse than anything that Stephen King or Edgar Allan Poe. This is out of Edgar Allan Poe. Okay, this is the pit in the pendulum. This is the cask of Amontillado. And just to give you a couple of excerpts, images of 9/11 abound at Gitmo. In the hot, fly-blown shack that guards use to send their emails home, a poster with a picture of the World Trade Center's Twin Towers asks, "Are you in a New York state of mind? Don't leak information. Our enemy can use it to kill U.S. troops or more innocent people." Who's their enemy? The whole world knows about Guantanamo Bay. The whole world knows, by virtue of the reportage of people like David Rose, what's going on there. And I don't care how many times some ridiculous, half-witted, numbnuts the Republican congressman gets on there and says, "Well, I ate the fruit plate and it was dang good, and I'd like to have one every day." Well, you fat Republican slob, we'd kind of like for you to get on your hands and knees and bow your head until the concrete touches the ground to get a drink out of a faucet that is conveniently placed to accommodate Muslim needs for foot washing, and get a nice swig of warmer than air temperature salad, the brackish water that turns yellow in a cup. We'd love that for you, you filthy Republican. Sorry. Other icons have been left painted in concrete in the rock garden where departing units memorialize their tour of duty. Among the most elaborate is a waist-high model of the towers, swaddled by the stars and stripes. That's flag desecration. That's probably touching the ground. They'll have to burn that flag now. Swaddled by the Stars and Stripes. It was built by members of the 240th Military Police Company at the end of their stay in August 2003, who adorned it with this legend, and I quote, "That's why we're here, to defend freedom." Whenever two members of the Joint Task Force may happen to meet, they are supposed to enact a little ritual. Above Camp Delta's main gate is a banner bearing Operation Enduring Freedom's motto, "Honor bound to defend freedom." As the two soldiers approach, they are supposed to salute. One will say, "Honor bound," and the second will reply, "To defend freedom." And that is what passes for an attempt in this pitiful, broken military of ours to maintain morale. Oh, that's just part of it. Now, look, I'm sure by now that our good friend John Fox has posted an entry at headonradionetwork.com concerning this book. And we do appreciate John's many labors. They are Herculean. I imagine there's probably a link to a bookseller there. Or if you're listening to the podcast or the archive, you can go to the bookseller link at whiteRoseSociety.org. In either instance, if you buy the book and you go through one of those links, you help us out. If you want to read the book. And you're not going to be 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 days on this book unless the horror is just too much. You know, you get all Joseph Conrad, the horror. Unless the horror is too much for you to be able to do more than 5 or 10 pages at a time. And there's a chance that will be the case. The Guardian says you must read it. It's as simple as that. And then there's Harold Pinter, the great playwright. He says it's an icy indictment of the U.S. government. And Mr. Rose pulls no punches. This is not prettied up. This is our national shame. And as I said to Mr. Rose, what disturbs me one of the greatest extents is that we in the United States seem terribly, terribly adept at recognizing past mistakes. Ah, damn, we shouldn't have murdered all those millions of Indians. What were we thinking? Ah, damn, we shouldn't have let the big monopolistic industrial tycoons work immigrant people until they dropped dead. Ah, damn. Ah, damn, we shouldn't have imprisoned all those Japanese Americans just because they didn't look quite as white bread and European as we might have liked. But, well, it turned out some of those were some of our finest soldiers in the Second World. Ah, daggummit, we shouldn't have gone to Vietnam. Ah, darn. But not so good at looking into the future and saying, you know, putting a concentration camp on the tip end of Cuba might not be our best strategy for opposing those who oppose us. Nah, we're not very good at that. Not very good at all, I'm afraid. And I've let this story stew for a little bit, and we're going to include it during prayer meeting just because I think we ought to. I'd like your thoughts. And this is a natural outgrowth of things like Guantanamo and secret prisons in Romania and Poland, Thailand, floating prison ships in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Did you catch that one? A Republican gubernatorial candidate's call for a creation of a forced labor camp for illegal immigrants. Don Goldwater, nephew of Barry Goldwater. EFE, a national news agency in Spain, quoted him as saying he wanted to hold undocumented immigrants in camps to use them, quote, as labor in the construction of a wall and to clean the areas of the Arizona desert that they're polluting. You ready for this? I mean, No marching orders, but I gotta wonder at what point in time the American people go, you know, I really ain't up for becoming the next Nazi Germany. And I, okay, here, this is a shameless playing of the emotion card or whatever. We lose how many thousands of World War II veterans every year? And they actually fought fascism. They looked fascism in the eye and said, nah, I'm gonna kill you. One of those is laying in a hospital bed in the coronary care unit of a local hospital right now, and he happens to be my father. And I don't know what I, as one individual, can do. But I promised him a long time ago that I would do everything in my power to try to oppose the overt, blatant fascism of the Republican Party with all that I had in me. That's why I'm on the air tonight instead of at a hospital bedside. Because it matters to him, and it matters to me, and I know it matters to you. Dylan Thomas wrote a poem that said, do not go gentle into that good night. Do we? Have we? Will we? At what point in time does America rise up and resist this? Or do we not? And simply let tyranny and fascism and abuse be the search criteria by which some scholar on the internet 200 years from now will look for a historical account of the era in which you and I live. The choice is as simple and stark as that. This is Head On.
This is for you, Daddy.
I'm Bob Kincaid.
Took my love and I took took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in the snow-covered hills till the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
I'm a new mother, and my baby and I are healthy. But every minute, a woman dies in pregnancy or childbirth. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121.
We often hear claims Muslims don't condemn terrorism.
And that Islam condones violence.
As Muslims, we want to state clearly
that those who commit acts of terror in the name of Islam are betraying the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad.
We reject anyone of any faith who commits such brutal acts.
And will not allow our faith to be hijacked by criminals.
Islam is not about hatred and violence. It's about peace and justice.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Welcome back. About 10 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. You want to get in on any of this? 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. Email's easy, bob@headonradio.com. Now, you see, Don Goldwater called for these internment camps, whatever you want to call them, for illegal immigrants to clean up the way they're polluting the Arizona desert. How in the hell are they polluting? Well, they're dying in the desert there, Bob, and they're polluting the desert with their dead bodies, and, you know, occasionally they'll go number two behind a cactus somewhere, and we need to get them down there and clean up our desert. Now, you see, who was it? John Death from Above McCain and Congressman Jim Colby, a couple of other Republicans, came out and said, oh, he's not, no, we disavow any knowledge of his actions. He's not, no. Republican voters will disavow anything that he's not. Yeah, he is. See, Don Goldwater is a mainstream Bush-voting, Bush-loving Republican. Give him a sheet, and he'll throw it over his head. You don't need, you know, he'll cut the eye holes out of his own little pillowcase. You don't have to do it for him. Racists, killers, fascists. I mean, go with your one-stop shopping option and just look for them all in the Republican Party, because, by God, they are right down the center aisle. Now, we talked a little bit, and I was duly chastised by our good friend Andy for doing it, but we talked a little bit about Flush Flemball last night. It is worth remembering that that freak is out there selling T-shirts that say, Club Gitmo.
Where he belongs.
I want that sorry bastard in one of those dog cages so bad I can taste it. You think he could bend over far enough to get a drink of that lukewarm, sickening salt water when he got thirsty enough to do it? You think he could? I mean, after all, SOB's got a back injury. That was so bad he got himself a junk addiction over it. I mean, it was so bad he had to cut back from 36 holes of golf a day to 18. That's how bad it was. These people that joke about that place. Did you catch the part of where they've rubbed all the flesh off of their fingers? Grabbing at the wire mesh of their cages? Yeah. We've got human beings in cages. You know, same basic DNA structure. Basic, same DNA structure as you've got, I've got. And we tolerate it. Oh, we don't like it. We talk about it. We have incredibly erudite, intelligent authors like Mr. Rose on to talk about it. And he's trying to stop it. He's pouring his heart out into a word processor to lay out before the world the damning case against the United States for perpetrating a crime against humanity like Guantanamo Bay. But it's still happening. And I hope to God that Mr. Rose's insider was correct and that Justice Stevens has written the majority opinion in the Hamdan case. Because that's almost a drop-dead sure thing that Mr. Hamdan might win. But step back for a moment before you pop the champagne or go and crack the pop tab on a natural light. Or something, you know, Milwaukee's Beast, or whatever it is you celebrate with. Before you do that, step back and recognize that you're dealing with an administration that has already told the American people that it is more than willing to tell the judiciary and the Congress to go piss up a rope. It will do as it sees fit. Signing statements? Signing statements, anyone? And what did I see when I was reading today? That was described as the president's means of indicating that he disagrees with the constitutionality of the law. No, no, no. You see, you Republican dumbasses, the way you do that is to sue to get it overturned. And seeing how you got the better part of the federal judiciary all appointed up underneath you, you got a good chance of getting through. But see, they don't want to win most of them. They don't want to win the majority of them. They're only happy if they win all of them, and they can't. There are some that cannot be won. There are some cases that cannot be won by this administration. Let's assume for a moment that Mr. Hamdan wins his case before the Supreme Court. Let's just assume that. What's that mean to George Bush? What's that mean to cab drivers grabbed off the streets for $5,000 ransoms by the Northern Alliance and sold, literally sold, to American forces for transport to Guantanamo? What does that mean? What does that mean? It means that until such time as the Supreme Court has its own army, the Bush administration will damned well do as it pleases. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And you know that to be true, because that's the way they are. Do you need examples? I'm not gonna cite examples. I'd be babbling well into the top of the hour break. 750 times, dear leader has appended a congressional act with one of his signing statements. 750 times? Oh, well. It's just a republic. I mean, dude, it's not like it was going to last forever or nothing. You know, chill out. Kick back, you know, watch some American Idol. And, you know, live easy in the fascist state. Okay? Kill. 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 I hope we will have another guest coming up after the top of the hour break. Jacob Hornsberger. Now, I get the idea Mr. Hornsberger is a libertarian. I saw the thing printed on LouRockwell.com, published on LouRockwell.com. He is with a kind of a libertarian organization, and I'm not usually down with those guys. But I'm not going to sit here and be some sort of organ grinder's monkey for the Democratic Party. When I see something I agree with, I'm going to try to share it with you. And he wrote something that I came down four square with. And I think you will, too. So, God willing, the crick don't rise. Well, for everybody except poor old Spike over in Eastern PA and the people in the Middle Atlantic Seaboard and our good friend Mike in Woodstock, New York, watching the trees fall down from the endless rain of this, this warming planet. God willing, the crick don't rise. We'll be talking to Jacob Hornsberger after the top of the hour. After that, jump in. That or I'm going to sit here and talk about whatever I want to. Nah. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee deep in gore.
nights they battled the band to their knees. They killed to earn a living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson Gunner, Roland the Thompson Gunner. His comrades fought beside him.
This is a Quality News Network. The Supreme Court issued a ruling today that effectively allows states to redraw district lines whenever they want. The ruling came out of the controversial redistricting of Texas, which shifted more power to Republicans. However, the court also agreed that Hispanic voting rights were violated in one district. A lower court has been ordered to review that part of the case. Israelis arrested a Hamas politician today as thousands of troops and tanks moved into Gaza City, trying to force Palestinian militants to hand over an Israeli hostage. Warnings of potential epidemics and health disasters have been issued after airstrikes knocked out water, electricity, and bridges. Also today, Israeli warplanes hovered above the residence of Syria's president, saying a direct link exists between Syria and Hamas. One official says Israel wants to assassinate a hardline Hamas leader who is in exile in Syria. In Iraq, nearly a dozen Sunni insurgent groups say they will halt their attacks, but only on the condition that the U.S. military leaves Iraq within 2 years. President Nouri al-Maliki says setting a timetable for withdrawal doesn't make sense, since he doesn't know when Iraqi forces will be able to take over. In Washington, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan says the country is plagued not only by terrorism, but also drug trafficking and corruption. He says in order to ensure stability in the country, the international community must continue fighting these forces. His comments came during testimony before the House Armed Services Committee. In Washington, the Bush administration has issued new guidelines to prevent the theft of personal information on employees and civilians. Federal civilian agencies now have 45 days to implement the new measures. At Cape Canaveral, Florida, Saturday's scheduled launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery may be delayed. Officials say there's a 60% chance that storms and thick clouds will prevent the takeoff. Across the eastern seaboard, at least 9 people have died and thousands have evacuated due to flooding. Officials have declared emergencies across parts of New Jersey, New York, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. In New York, architects have unveiled the newly designed Freedom Tower. Standing at nearly 1,800 feet, it will become the tallest building in America. At the United Nations today, Montenegro became the 192nd member of the world body. That comes nearly 1 month after the country declared independence from Serbia. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Federal Reserve started the first of a 2-day meeting today, which is expected to end with a 5.25% rate hike. It would be the 17th successive hike since June 2004. A new survey finds that most retirees in the U.S. will not receive health benefits from their employers. 95% of the companies surveyed say they plan to reduce that coverage over the next 5 years. Daimler Chrysler says its smart car will be available in the U.S. starting in 2008. The two-seater will be aimed at trendy urban consumers in the East and West Coasts. Honda says it will build a new $500 million assembly plant in Indiana. It's the sixth North American factory. Starting in the fall, Verizon says subscribers who cancel their service will not have to pay as much of a hefty cancellation fee. The fees will be prorated so they can match the time left on their contracts. FBI agents in the New York City area have broken up two international movie piracy rings. Bootlegging has reportedly cost the motion picture industry millions of dollars. An Iraqi oil ministry spokesman says that oil production is at its highest level, 2.5 million barrels a day, since the country was invaded in 2003. Production fell at that time because of insurgent attacks. Light sweet crude settled at $72.19 a barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 49 points, NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Almost 6 minutes after the hour, the second hour indeed, as our good friend Brian Reznor noted of this head on Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. I'm Bob Kincaid. I truly do appreciate you sharing your time and joining me and my darling wife, Agnes, for this extended discussion. At this time, we're joined on the phone by a gentleman, Jacob Hornberger. Mr. Hornberger, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm awfully glad you could join us, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your evening to do so. You write for the Frontier of Freedom Foundation?
The Future of
Freedom. Or Future, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Future of Freedom Foundation.
Yeah, and it's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. All my pleasure. I ran across your article the other day on killing Iraqi children, and it felt like deja vu or something. It's something we've been talking about for nearly a year on this network. What motivated you to write this article, sir?
Well, we've opposed the war in Iraq long before the invasion even took place, and we've always stressed moral principles as far as foreign policy is concerned. We don't judge a war on whether it's being successful or whether it's failing or whatever. We judge it on whether it's moral or not. And as this war and the occupation has gone on, there's always been this concern for American troops, but very little for the Iraqi people, who really are innocent of this entire thing. I mean, they had nothing to do with 9/11. Their government had nothing to do with 9/11. And yet, here the U.S. government has decided to invade their land, their country, and kill tens of thousands of people in the process. And so what I said in this article is that, you know, there's a relative indifference to the lives of the Iraqi people, including the children. For example, when they kill Zarqawi, there was a much celebration over killing this guy, but hardly anyone gave any thought to the fact that the two bombs that killed him killed a 5-year-old girl at the same time. Well, I would argue that that's not worth it, and yet federal officials would argue, yes, it is worth it, because you killed a terrorist along with this little girl. It was the same with the sanctions. The sanctions killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children through infectious diseases and so forth, and Madeleine Albright expressed the official U.S. policy and said those deaths were worth it. Well, I think that's not what this country's about, and so that's what motivated me to write the article in terms of moral principles.
Well, you know, another thing, you know, with this worth it analysis, and frankly, I don't know how the human mind gets, I don't know if it's in the water in Washington, D.C., or, I mean, I'm being a little bit flip, but I truly don't understand how the human mind gets to a point. Well, was it Hannah Arendt who coined the phrase the banality of evil?
That's right.
This seems to be that.
I agree. I mean, they dehumanize these people, and yet out of the other side of their mouth, they say they invaded them to help them and bring democracy to them. Well, it does. The two cannot be reconciled. There has been a callousness toward the Iraqi people that stretches all the way back to the early 90s, even before that, when the U.S. government was aligned with Saddam Hussein and supporting his dictatorship.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about how moral we are and upright and religious. I wonder how many of the people who cheerled this war, Mr. Hornberger, how many of them realized that there was an ancient, you know, older than most Western churches, Christian community in Iraq that has been obliterated?
That's right, because under Saddam Hussein, as dictatorial as he was, and I don't see that his dictatorship's any worse than many of the other dictatorships in that part of the world, including the Pakistan dictatorship, by the way, but the Christian community was fairly well protected. I mean, as long as you didn't get involved in politics, from what I understand the Iraqi situation was, try to overthrow the government and so forth, Saddam pretty much left you alone, and that included the Christian community. Those people are fleeing today.
If they're not dead.
That's right. That's right.
Well, can you offer any analysis or any rash explanation? How do you get to the point, and, you know, you mentioned, well, we killed a terrorist, therefore the killing of a five-year-old was worth it. You know, how do you get to the point where you don't worry about the five-year-old first?
I think the level of consciousness has plummeted so much in this country, conscience and consciousness, because it's the same analysis overall in the country. I mean, people keep arguing, well, we got to stick this out so in order for the occupation to be successful. Let's just keep staying there. We can reach success. Well, they've killed tens of thousands of Iraqi people. So what they're really saying is that if we're successful, and however they measure that, they're saying those tens of thousands of dead people will be worth it, will have been worth it. And every day that the occupation goes on, the principle's the same. They're having to kill people, many of whom are doing nothing worse than resisting an unlawful, immoral occupation of their country. I mean, it's no different from what Americans would do if this country were invaded and occupied by a foreign power.
I've tried to make that point and made it a dozen times. What, you know, if the, as Rush is fond of referring to them, what if the Chi-Coms were in Chicago? What would the right wing war cheerleaders do then?
That's right. I mean, some of them would cooperate with the occupiers.
I think most of them would.
Yeah, but some of us would be in the resistance, and they'd be calling us terrorists and so forth. But we'd be fighting against the occupiers just the same way that most people do when they're occupied by a foreign power. And it's not enough to say, well, our government thought there were weapons of mass destruction. We thought they were there. Well, if that was even the real justification for the war, as soon as they realized they weren't there, they should have gotten the heck out of it and apologized. So we now know in retrospect the fact that they stayed there, that it had much more to do with that. It had to do with regime change, trying to install their puppet government, which is what U.S. foreign policy has been about for the last several decades.
Well, Jay Garner pretty much brought that all home when... he's been interviewed on a number of occasions, said he got to Baghdad, got a call from Rummy, and don't unpack, because he was going to get there and have elections right off the bat.
That's right. But in many instances, they even canceled the elections because they were scared of the results on the local level, and they started installing their own puppets in there. And then they tried to have this little caucus system, which was going to install either Chalabi or Alawi. And Sistani, the Ayatollah Sistani, nixed that and said, oh, no, we're going to have national elections, because he obviously knew the Shiites were the majority group in Iraq. So he really outsmarted Bush. And that's what a lot of Americans don't even realize. It has not hit them in this little buying into this democracy business that they have installed a radical Islamic regime in power that has actually aligned itself with Iran, a country that Bush is also thinking about attacking. It's very bizarre.
What would bring this home to the American people?
That is a good question. I've asked myself that question. Unfortunately, I think the only thing that would bring it home to them is a military disaster. Because, you know, we have a hard time talking to people at the moral level where we're saying, you know, it's wrong to attack a country that does not attack the United States. That's what the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal was all about.
Oh, yes.
And yet, people don't want to hear that. They don't want to talk about a war of aggression.
Well, see, the minute you say war crimes, your average respondent is, well, we're not Nazis.
That's right. It's that, you know, whatever the U.S. government does, it's incapable of doing something bad. It's almost like people have come to make the government their idol or their parent, where it's just it cannot do anything wrong per se because we elected it, we put it into office, and therefore it must be good. Well, that's just nonsense, because simply because you elect a guy into office or a group into office doesn't mean they're not going to do bad things.
Well, if you wander around on the Internet and you look at foreign press, you know that the rest of the world knows exactly what we're doing in Iraq because they are putting the gory photographs on the front page and in the slick magazines.
That's right.
How much of our failure to reach the American public with the immorality of this do you think is driven by the servile, outright sniveling coverage of this war afforded by the mainstream press?
I think a tremendous amount. They're sycophantic. They want to be in good with the administration. They want to maybe have a chance for White House press secretary. And so you've got a press that's cowed by the administration, by Cheney's attacks, and they want to be in good with the public. And so we have the furthest thing from an independent press. I mean, thank goodness for the Internet and talk radio, because the mainstream press, I think, has just really let America down. And as you say, Europeans can see exactly what's happening. That's why they're very angry at this country, because they're seeing the truth of what this country's done. It's attacked a country that never attacked the United States.
Well, you know, as much as people, you know, and it does turn them off. You know, we're not Hitler. We're not Nazi Germany. Iraq is our Poland.
That's right. The principle is no different. When German troops crossed into Poland, of course, Hitler made up the excuse that they had been attacked. And we now learn that that was a lie, but the German people took the same position. Hey, we've got a right to believe our president and so forth. Well, attacking Iraq simply because we got attacked on 9/11 does not provide the U.S. government with the right to attack Bolivia, Uruguay, or any other country that did not have anything to do with that attack. And I think that's what we've got to keep driving home to people. You don't have your government has no right to attack one country simply because a group has attacked you somewhere else.
Did you happen to catch the news today out of Russia?
Yeah, where Putin's saying that he's going to send some forces in to seek revenge for the killing of the diplomats, the Russian diplomats.
Yeah, that's going to work out real good.
Yeah, I'm going to be real interested to see how he does that. Does that mean he's going to send in a battalion, a division, secret police? Good luck trying to find those guys.
Yeah, well, these are supposed to be special forces.
Well, good luck.
Yeah, and, you know, they've got experience dealing with the Chechens, which means they've probably got a little bit more cultural experience inside, Islam. They got some Islamic territories, things like that. This does not bode well for our occupation, you know, and his order to go in and find and punish and kill came along with a statement that the occupation is a failure.
That's right.
And George Bush, you know, well, we know George looked into Putin's soul. He told us he did.
That's right, and he found that he could trust him. I'll be real interested to see how Putin intends, or those special forces intend to find those guys. I mean, there's no law and order there. There's no investigative facility to find out who's committing the crimes and who's not. I think if Putin were smart, if every country were smart, they'd get out of there until that occupation is over. Because I don't think those people are going to be nice to anyone as long as that occupation exists. That's why you don't have congressmen going over there and spending their junkets like they love to do.
Oh, yeah, because they love to pull that stuff in Vietnam.
Of course.
Go to Vietnam, ride on a helicopter, come back and be patriotic.
Right. This is not a safe place to be, despite the fact that they call it now a free country.
Well, I guess the next question for me to ask you, because it wasn't something you said explicitly or implicitly, as far as I could tell in your essay, is it time to start talking about get out now?
Well, it was time to start talking about that the day before the invasion, but that's not the solution. I mean, I'm sympathetic and I agree with those people that say it's time to get out now. I mean, and I would argue that on moral principles, if you don't have a right to kill people there, if you don't have a right to be there, you don't have a right to kill people. That means that it's not a question of timetable, because the longer you're there, the more people you have to kill. So the only moral position is get out before you have to kill one more person. Now, but I think it goes much bigger than that. I mean, Americans need to be debating the existence of this empire that we have in existence. And Eisenhower warned about this. The military-industrial complex, troops in more than 100 countries intervening in conflicts that we have no business intervening in. And in the words of John Adams, going abroad in search of monsters to destroy. And until we confront that, what good does it do to pull the troops out of Iraq if 2 weeks later they're attacking Iran or North Korea and so forth? So the only real solution to this is dismantling the empire. The best book on this that is around there is by Chalmers Johnson, who formerly had consulted with the CIA. He's a very reputable scholar. It's called The Sorrows of Empire.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful book, and it's along these lines, is that we've got to be debating something on a much higher level in this country, and that's entire foreign policy rather than just Iraq.
Can a country that casts more votes for American Idol than it does for president engage in that debate?
I think so. I mean, you know, I figure that if I was able to survive 12 years in the public school system and start seeing what was going on in this country, anybody can. It's just it takes a matter of will, confronting the facts, confronting the truth. I mean, there's that saying of seek ye first, you know, the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And I think that means truth. Seek the truth. And then put your government back in order again. That's the job of a citizen, to rein in government when it's doing wrong. Because if we don't do that as citizens, Bob, we are no different from any other citizens in history to let their governments go amok.
And there is an issue of conscience to all this, isn't there?
Absolutely, because especially those of us who believe in God, that, well, you know, we say everyone's going to have to answer to God. I mean, that comes first. You don't have to, you're not going to answer to the state, to Caesar. You got to answer to God for your beliefs, for your actions. And I think that includes a lot of what we're talking about.
Well, how do you respond then? I don't know about the rest of your. I read a little of your other stuff. We might, you know, part company on a couple of issues, but I'm four square with you on this. How do you square that to? Well, you know, George Bush is a registered or whatever United Methodist. Okay, the United Methodist Church tried to go to him and tell him this is not what Jesus would do. And he ignored them, wouldn't even meet with them. A few weeks later, he shows up on a videotape on the Jumbotron at the Southern Baptist Convention meeting because the Southern Baptist Convention was, came out and said, well, you know, Peter owned a sword and render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, so let's go kill us some Iraqis in the name of God. How do you square all this up with that part of the religious community?
It is so difficult. I mean, the guy who's really been doing great work on this is Lawrence Vance, and his stuff is found on lewrockwell.com. I can't understand it, because especially the pro-life community. I mean, life is valuable not just in the woman's womb, but also when they're alive. The value of these Iraqi lives, these are precious lives. I mean, it's just so amazing to me, the callous indifference that the Pentagon doesn't even keep track of the number of Iraqis they kill.
No, but when Johns Hopkins went over and did a study, and, you know, this was 2 years ago, Johns Hopkins said over 100,000 Iraqi civilians, more than half of whom were women and children, had already been killed by us.
That's right. That's right. They don't know what the exact numbers are because the Pentagon said, we're not going to keep track of them. But the estimates have run from all the way from 30,000 to 100,000, and that was the study you were talking about. You know, the Pope John Paul II said the same thing before the war. He said, you know, those who wage this war might well have to answer to God. Note those exact words, but he was firmly in opposition to this war. I think he saw it as a war of aggression. And how do you reconcile this as a soldier? I mean, you're put into a position where you're not supposed to be, not only morally, because the country hasn't attacked your country, but legally, too, because there's been no declaration of war by Congress. We tend to forget that that's what our system of government requires, a congressional declaration of war. So they put this soldier out there, and they put him in a position of saying, you will either get killed when the resistors fire on you, or you will kill. Well, where is the morality in killing someone when you know you're not supposed to be there? That's like breaking into a person's home and the homeowner starts firing at you and you say, well, I'm going to fire back in self-defense, all of us would agree, you can't do that.
No, it doesn't quite work that way. Well, you lead me to a very interesting topic. We've talked a good bit on this program in the last week or so, and even had one of the last interviews that he was able to give, Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who is the first member of the officer corps to refuse an order to deploy to Iraq.
Let me tell you something. That case has got to have the Pentagon and the entire administration absolutely scared to death, because Watata is confronting the issues directly. And he is saying this is an illegal war and it is an immoral war, and I am refusing to go on those grounds. They know that if they prosecute him, he will take that up on appeal. And it seems to me that if he confronts those issues directly, there is no way that the Supreme Court is going to be able to avoid addressing directly and frontally the constitutionality of this war, which they've always been reluctant to do. But in a criminal prosecution, I don't see how they can avoid it. And that's why I think that case scares them to death, and I think they're going to do their best to work out some way to cut him a deal where it never goes to court.
Do you think it also scares them to death from the standpoint of possibly empowering or enabling another officer out there somewhere to say the same thing?
Absolutely. That's the quandary they're in, that if they offer this guy a deal like an honorable discharge if he just goes away, then they've got the problem that other officers and other enlisted men will do the same thing.
You ever read Catch-22?
Oh, yeah, many years ago.
You remember when Colonel Korn and Cathcart came to Yossarian and said, listen, you don't have to fly any more missions. All you have to do is say you like us.
I don't remember. It's in college.
Yeah, this is that. I don't know where this all ends. I don't know where the beginning of the end is. I know that we're in deep moral trouble. I know that we are in deep military trouble. And you know, do we have to go through what happened after Vietnam again?
I'm hoping that we come out of this thing way on top in terms of limited government and individual liberty, where people are thinking in terms of a much higher level. I mean, that's my hope, is that this whole thing boomerangs on them in the sense that the American people start asking some fundamental questions, like, what is the role of government in a free society? Why is it that our founding fathers turned away, rejected this type of an approach, an interventionist empire approach? Why did they choose a constitutional republic? And I think that if we can just get that debate going, then I think we will have really achieved something out of all this darkness here.
I hope that you are right. I hope that this debate begins to take place. We heard John McCain talk about it in his oh my God, why did he do it? Speech in front of Liberty University, and again at what was it, New School or NYU? I'm not sure where. And then Hillary Clinton came out a few weeks later and said, you know, we've got to have a debate about the war. I tend to agree, but the thing is, I think I also share your sentiments insofar as what I've urged on this program is that, you know, there's some very basic moral issues here. And one of them is, when you are doing evil, and let's say you don't realize you're doing evil, the minute you realize you're doing evil, it becomes incumbent upon you to stop doing evil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I'm saying is that you can't think in terms of, well, let's set a timetable. Let's see if we'll stay there 7 more months or something. Because if you got no right to be there, that occupation entails killing people. And I don't see how that can be reconciled under moral principles at all.
And staying when you know you have no business there, essentially, doesn't that also constitute the continuation of an ongoing criminal enterprise?
Absolutely. And this magnet defense of this thing, where it says, well, we'll attract the terrorists and we'll fight them over there instead of here in the United States. I mean, that's the height of immorality, too, because what you're really saying is, well, we're in fight with this group, but we don't want to have that fight on our homeland, so we'll pick some innocent people like the Iraqis and have the fight on their homeland. Well, in the process, we've destroyed their country. We've killed tens of thousands of people. Where is the morality in that? They didn't have anything to do with this.
Well, when you make a decision like that, you've essentially said that somehow or another Iraqi people are less human than American people.
And less valuable. That's right. That's exactly what...
And you can't square that with any kind of right to life. You can't square it with any kind of Christian or Judeo or Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Taoist, Shinto, any of them. You can't square that with anybody's morality.
That's right. And God loves every one of his creatures equally. And so you can't say he loves them less, then therefore it's more acceptable to kill them than Americans. And I think the other thing we've got to remember, Bob, is why it is that the world is so angry at us. Right after 9/11, they said, "Oh, these attacks came because they hate our freedom and values." Our religion.
Home mortgages.
I'm sorry.
Home mortgages. They hate us for our home mortgages.
Yeah, exactly. Rock and roll and so forth. Well, it's that thing that they're trying to do to distract people away from what the U.S. government had done to people overseas to make them so angry. I mean, when you're killing people and their friends and their family, they get just as angry as Americans do. And I remember during the Vietnam War that the government was saying, "Oh, well, the Vietnamese people are Asians and they place a less value in human life than Americans. So if you can kill 100,000 of them, it's not that big a deal to them." Well, they were starting to make that same suggestion over here, and that's just not true. Those people hurt, they grieve, they get angry, and that's what was building up that anger and hatred, is that U.S. foreign policy, the sanctions, the unconditional support of the Israeli government, no matter what it did to the Palestinians. We also haven't talked about what the government did in the Iranian situation, where the CIA ousted the democratically elected prime minister of Iran.
Mossadegh.
53, Mossadegh. I would bet you that 98% of Americans don't even know that.
98% of Americans don't know that when the students stormed the United States Embassy, they weren't just carrying pictures of Ayatollah Khomeini. They were carrying those great big placards with pictures of Mossadegh on them.
You got it. Because they had not forgotten what our government had done. And he was a beloved man. He was respected. He was Time Magazine's Man of the Year on their cover. And here the CIA goes and says, "We're going to oust him from power secretly." And gradually the Iranians discovered what happened. And so they have the Iranian Revolution. They take those people hostage. And Americans sit there and buy into this official government propaganda that says, "We don't understand why they're doing this. They're just filled with hate. They're Muslims. This is what they do." Nonsense.
And it's racist too.
To a certain extent, I think so. That they especially when they're calling these guys ragheads and so forth, sort of diminishing their humanity.
We covered a story a couple of nights ago, Mr. Hornberger, about the Marine corporal videotaped in Iraq singing a song that he had written called "Haji Girl." Are you familiar with this?
I read about that. Yeah.
This is the kind of... America doesn't get well from this easily.
No, this one's going to take a long time, especially those soldiers. I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of mental problems after this one.
Me too, especially since the chief injury or the defining injury coming out of this war is TBI, traumatic brain injury.
That, but I just think the psychological impact...
Well, sure.
Even notwithstanding the physical injuries, I think this is going to get to people. That are killing over there. I don't see how it cannot affect you. Every so often you read references to that in the paper, that some people are coming back with some really bad emotional, psychological problems.
And we're going to read more and more about it. Mr. Hornberger, we are building here what we're calling America's other liberal talk network. I don't know if you'd ever heard of us before, but we talk a lot about these kind of things. And I think this is where we begin the outreach. I think this is where we begin the conversation. I hope you've enjoyed your conversation with me as much as I have with you, and I wish you the very best, sir.
I've tremendously enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me on, and I wish you all the best, and thank you for your courtesy, and thank your listeners.
I certainly will, and you have a very good evening, sir.
You too. God bless you, Bob.
God bless you as well, sir. I say that because, like I said, I've read a little bit of other things that Mr. Hornberger's written. I don't agree with a lot of it. I think he and I would come to rather profound disagreements on other areas. But did you hear a word in what he said to disagree with? I didn't. Go and read the essay, "Killing Iraqi Children." I posted the link in the chat room, but for those of you not there, and why aren't you, fff.org/comment Future of Freedom Foundation. And we didn't get into this, but I want to share the very front end of this essay with you. He quotes an editorial in the Detroit News. And the quote is as follows. Some war critics are suggesting Iraq terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi should have been arrested and prosecuted rather than bombed into oblivion. Why expose American troops to the danger of an arrest when bombs work so well? And Mr. Hornberger writes, here's one possible answer. In order not to send a 5-year-old Iraqi girl into oblivion with the same 500-pound bombs that sent al-Zarqawi into oblivion. We have to start talking in stark terms. Nobody's, you know, and you know how the right wing is. Well, I see they're doing it again. Just like Vietnam, they're calling us baby killers. Ha-ha. But there is an element in which you, when the slaughter of the innocents begins to tell on a people, and it will tell on us, we're going to become a nation of Lady Macbeth wandering around, wiping our hands out, damned spot. Let's take a break. No break. Okay, I'm sorry. Hey, Steady, are you there, buddy?
Steady's still here. I'm on the corner of Harbor Boulevard and Seaward in Ventura, California with MoveOn.org. We've got like 50 people here for an oil street concert. Protesting the oil lobby in Congress saying, oil money out of Congress.
Wow, it sounds pretty energetic there, Steady.
Yeah, we're on the street corner. We got a couple Harleys right next to us. We're pretty enthusiastic. The cop across the street. Major. But I wanted to check in and let you know I'm still doing this.
And bless you for it, Steady. What brings everyone to that street corner there tonight? Is this spontaneous or was it planned?
MoveOn.org, and it's for to address the oil lobby inside Congress and to tell Congressman Gallagher not to be taking the oil lobby money and to start thinking about his people at the gas pumps, not killing us with the inflation and prices and everything. But we got a really good turnout. We're about 40, 50, something like that. Here on the corner, there's another one starting at the top of the hour, about 10 miles from here. So people are pretty pissed off, man. And they're out here in numbers.
Well, that's wonderful. This is the kind of grassroots organizing that changes things, Steady.
I'm glad to have the Head On Radio Network and you guys taking the calls, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. This is where the conversation starts.
Love you all. Thanks a million.
All right, Steady, update us a little bit later, will you?
I will. I'll call from the other location after the top of the hour.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Adios, amigos.
Vaya con Dios. Our good friend Michael Stettler, Steady, in Southern California, in Ventura right now, where people are taking it upon themselves to try to get a handle on their government. Now do we take the break, dear? Now we take the break. Oh, communication, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, a little conversation going on in the studio. I hope these conversations tonight have meant as much to you as they have to me. I think this is important. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On.
I'm a lot like you were. Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Old man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost, like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says a card check agreement is a major boost to help the union organize UPS Freight, a non-union subsidiary of UPS with 15,000 workers.
And it's a tremendous breakthrough, really big news. We're all very excited about it. And we're already out collecting cards, and we're picking a location where we're going to do this. We're 100% that it's going to work.
Hoffa also says getting UPS to agree to early contract negotiations will help protect Teamster pensions and health coverage.
UPS is making a lot of money. We've got a pretty good relationship with them. We're going to be able to really protect our members, get them wage increases, increase our health care, and to make sure everybody's protected with health care and pensions.
Even with harsh words being fired on all sides, the Connecticut AFL-CIO voted on Tuesday to endorse incumbent Senator Joe Lieberman over his opponent Ned Lamont in the August Democratic primary. Supporters say that during his history, Lieberman has only voted against AFL-CIO priorities 25% of the time. But his opponents focused on issues such as the Iraq War, Social Security, and predominantly his votes in favor of free trade. Ken De La Cruz is president of the Metal Trades Council.
I hope that after this is over, that we can get Joe Lieberman, all of us, even for the ones that get along greatly with Joe, and to beat the shit out of him.
Paul Filson, director of the Service Employees International Union in Connecticut, cited a position that many progressives identify as a major issue with the Connecticut senator, a perceived close relationship with the current Republican president.
He supports the worst boss this country has ever had, George Bush.
The endorsement by the Connecticut AFL-CIO is viewed by the Lieberman camp as an important victory, and they say it shows accusations that the senator doesn't reflect progressive ideals are unfounded.
It looks like 52,000 child daycare workers in New York State will get union rights after all, despite a veto by Republican Governor George Pataki. New York Working Families Party spokesman Alex Navarro says the party put pressure on the GOP-controlled state Senate to deliver an overwhelming override vote. The Democrat-controlled Assembly is expected to vote on that override soon.
Initiatives like this are critical if we're going to stop the middle class of this country from disappearing. So we're optimistic and excited that this initiative will soon become law in New York.
Here is today's economic report. The housing market showed further signs of cooling Wednesday as the Mortgage Bankers Association released numbers showing mortgage applications on the decline. Applications dropped by nearly 7% last week. The National Association of Realtors said on Tuesday that sales of existing homes also fell in the United States, down by 1.2% in May.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Okay, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for a Southern Baptist church in the northwest corner of Alabama, about 1979. Because I remember. You know, I had the album, the Best of the Doobies. Everybody had that album.
Yes, they did.
It wasn't as handy as a double album foldout, but we won't go into that. But I remember, I remember saying to the preacher, look at the, you talk about how bad rock and roll is. Look at this. And I played him, Jesus Is Just All Right. And he said, don't you understand that, satanic son? Don't you understand what they're trying to tell you? They're trying to tell you that Jesus is just all right. Jesus is not just all right. Jesus is the Son of the living God. He is the King of Kings.
And I won't ever want to hear that around me again. And I hope for your soul that you will go home and destroy that satanic piece of garbage. I kid you not. I kid you not. So, you know, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist and I'm doing the best I can. Okay, this is Conversation Radio, so let's go do some telephone. Mike is calling from Woodstock, New York. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
I'm doing good. There's been extensive flooding in Ulster County up here in upstate New York. For some reason, the creek that I'm at hasn't gone too nuts, but the road's washed out in spots, and there's some major problems up here in up in northwest New York State.
Well, Bruce Birch had a call from a friend of the program in Easton, PA, and they're in much the same shape.
Yes, they are. It's the same overall storm, and you know, I've got a friend who got flooded out exactly a year ago, and she just recovered from it, and floodwaters came back in and just swamped her again, and she's beside herself. You know, it's a woman without any money and gotten zero, very little help from FEMA. I think they gave her a couple $100. This is pre-Katrina. This was premonitions of Katrina.
Yeah, right.
What happened to this woman? She's a single parent in Kingston, New York, which is a kind of urban place in the middle of the mountains, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on there. I sent you some information on SEO. Take a look at that when you get a chance.
I did. I have.
All right.
And I've also sent it on to people who are far more web savvy than I.
All right, because supposedly this little book this woman wrote, which she gave to me for free, nicely enough, is good. And then, really, I was calling, I guess, to talk about a conversation that I had with a right-winger that was interesting.
Oh, good. Do please.
You know, in the course of the day, I do customer service for a travel business, and we're an alternative travel company. So, you know, as the owner of the company, I feel like I have the right to really basically say whatever I want. And I basically try to feel people out on their political views, which may or may not be smart to sell things, but it's what I do. And I made a comment about the crime family, this guy, and we kind of got into it a little bit. But then as the conversation evolved, we found we had something in common. And the thing that we had in common was that we both felt that the time was now to make changes to save the environment. And I think this is a place where the right and the left can meet on a common ground that makes sense.
I think some elements of the right can have this dialogue. You know, a lot. I don't know how many. You know, this is a very hunting oriented area, Mike, and I don't know how many.
Wait, what?
Very hunting-oriented.
Oh, yeah, like up here, too, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how many stickers I saw, you know, sportsman for Bush. but when you get down and start talking with, okay, you like to hunt deer, you like to hunt squirrels, rabbits, birds, whatever. They generally don't live on asphalt environments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen to your sporting life when there's no habitat left?
That's a good conversation to have, and I think this is something tangible now. That was something kind of weird. Oh yeah, this is something far off, but now people are saying, okay, yeah, we're seeing it happening, and there's a direct correlation. And I think this is a starting point the country is so incredibly polarized right now. There's a lot of hatred out there between both sides. And I think here is a conversation that we can have that's devoid of politics, isn't it? It should be, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. It can be.
It can be.
And that is why. And that's why the right and these monsters. That is why they immediately have to try to politicize it. You know, we've got to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge because, you know, you've got to have more gas for your Cadillac Escalade, and if you let those environmentalists have their way, you'll be riding a pogo stick.
Exactly right, and I think people need to become a little more intelligent. You know, of course, the kind of right winger and Republican I'm talking about, they're pretty much pocketbook Republicans. Also, they're not the real hardcore base. They're a little bit more open minded, or more like a northeastern old school Republican.
Yeah, an Eisenhower Republican.
An Eisenhower Republican, a Clinton Republican.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing that scares me, though, Mike, and it makes it hard for me to dialogue. because they'll sit there. I mean, they had a chance in 2004, and I heard it before 2004. I heard some of these old-line Republicans saying, well, you know, that George Bush, he scares me a little bit because he spends money, and this is what they always say, he spends money like a drunken sailor.
Yes.
And yet November rolled around in 2004, and...
They voted for him.
They voted for him.
Yeah, the machine they have is really good. The Democrats have never lately haven't been as successful at creating this mega monster of a marketing machine that the Republicans have done very well with.
And see, the other disappointing or disheartening or frightening thing, Mike, is that Democrats get elected president of the United States largely by Democrats and occasionally independents.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans can, in the modern era, cannot get elected president of the United States without Democratic votes.
Right. You look at Reagan and so on.
Yeah. I mean, it's a simple fact. The numbers aren't there. If Democrats vote like Democrats, you never would have had Reagan, would have had Bush. God knows you wouldn't have had Nixon in 68 or 72.
Well, you know, you've got Democrats and you've got Dixiecrats. And I think those Dixiecrats have kind of just become hardened into Republicans over time. Anyway, that was my comment. Do you know this term from hunting? I heard it before. They say nut meat.
I know nut meats in terms of the acorns and the hickory and the stuff that is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, from the stomachs of squirrels, and it's like a delicacy in the hills of Tennessee or something.
Right. Not for me. Nah, I don't do the squirrel brains and gravy thing either. I don't eat brains.
Nut meat. I love that. Anyway, well, thanks for the phone call. That rally against high gas prices sounded a little bit wild.
It did sound fun, didn't it?
In Ventura, they probably drove their Porsches and their Escalades.
easy.
All right. Anyway, any activity is probably good. And it's not true that the further west you go, the stupider you get. That is just not true.
Absolutely untrue. Thanks, Mike.
Checking in from Woodstock, New York. Peace.
All right, peace. And stack up the sandbags.
Yeah, right.
All right. Later. And onward to Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. Bob. Agnes, put Bob back on hold, please. That kind of felt like a phone call from the moon. I don't know what that was, that effect was. Luke. Hey, Luke.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Hey, did you get the email I sent you?
I saw it. I haven't gotten to open it yet. I've been wrapped up in those conversations.
That's okay. Now, this is one that I heard on Guy James' show yesterday, and it's a thing from PBS. And I cannot think of the lady's name. It's from the McNeil Lehrer Hour.
Gwen Ifill?
No. This is one of the other ones. I cannot think of her name. I'm sorry. I can't do it right now. But when you read it, look at the date on it. It's from December of 2001.
Oh, dear. I'm trying to load it right now. I can't. I just.
It's essentially, you know, where they're on the Times about you've revealed it.
So yeah.
Guess who went first? Some fellow named Bush and somebody at the Treasury Department.
Nah.
Because you remember, this is right after they were passing the Patriot Act and they were bragging about it. Do you remember when they went after one of the Islamic foundations?
Well, yeah. I remember, oh gosh, maybe September 22nd, 2001, somewhere along in there. And they broke into coverage, and Bush was announcing this new highfalutin program. Where I mean, I can tell you where I was when I heard this on the radio.
Well, this describes the thing they were using, and it was not the same name as the one now. But you're going to be hard pressed to prove to me it ain't the same group. It ain't the exact same thing. They've just renamed it three or four times, probably.
Well, sure. I mean, renaming is one of their gigs.
Information awareness.
Total information awareness. DARPA.
Oh gosh! No, I heard a guy talk about this yesterday, and I had to do a little searching on the net to find it. But it's right out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the one I liked was this one somebody the other day was talking about when they were talking about this. Said, "Oh, by the way, if you've been watching, was it 24 for the last couple of years?" It's like, gee, isn't that what they do all the time?
All the time.
It's like, well, I was telling Agnes tonight on the Daily Show, the guest is Al Gore. Last night, did you see who the guest was?
No.
Helen Thomas.
Oh, I worship at her shrine.
It's over on Crooks and Liars. You get a chance to look at it. It was very good. So she essentially cut Tony Snow into about two, three simple little pieces. It was fun. But the thing I heard last night on Oberman that I had not heard, and maybe it's just that maybe I don't listen, read the right things. I did not realize every show on Fox News has lost audience.
Yeah, but no. Well, I mean, I knew the numbers were going down for O'Reilly, and
Oberman was saying of what I guess one of their 15 shows or whatever it is, every one of them has lost audience.
Well, maybe that explains why I saw where CNN was inviting guest commentary from our buddy James Dobson.
Yeah, I tell you, God. You know, today the thing was CNN was running the thing about Obama. You know, where he was talking about. Wanting to appeal to the people about religion, and I'm sitting there going, "Yeah, as soon as they have the group thing where we get to see them excommunicate Dobson, Falwell, Robertson, there's a list of about 15 or 20."
But see, Luke, these vogues sort of run through our side of the debate, and that's the vogue now. We've got to reach out to the religious voters. Well, okay. I mean,
I'm not reaching out to them, but don't say I've got to sit there and preach the gospel if to get you in. It's like, if you think what we're doing is great, come on in.
But it's also a matter of how you define that religious community.
Yeah.
You want me to reach out to the Riverside Church in New York City? No problem. You want me to reach out to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference? Wow, they're already reaching out to me.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to reach out to Shelby Spong and Jim Wallace? It's not going to be a very far reach. But I don't believe in wasting one's energy or efforts. And frankly, you are on a fool's errand if you think you're going to reach out to James Dobson.
If I do, my name is Reed Richards. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I have an arm that will stretch 50 feet.
You know, Senator Obama is more than welcome to extend the olive branch, but I don't want. Remember
well,
the old.
I'm not going to let him slap me with it.
Well, not just that, but it's like Mama used to say. You know, when you fall out of that tree and break your leg, don't come running to me for sympathy.
Well, you know, it's like most other people. You know, people always say, "Well, just turn the other cheek." Said, "I'm tired of getting both of them slapped." Thank you.
Yeah.
You know.
And I don't want to. You know. Because if Senator Obama extends that olive branch, he will draw back a bloody stump,
mm-hmm.
and all he will do, and maybe this is the strategy, he will expose the white sheet and pillowcase nature of the Southern Baptist Church, of Focus on the Family, of the Falwell Organization, of most of your Pentecostal crowd. Maybe that's where it goes.
That may be the only way you do it, you know what I mean? Like, say, hold the light up to them and say, come on here in the light, let everybody see what you're all doing. You know, it's like, say, it's some of these things where, like, say, they do a lot of their stuff, you know, where they don't want to be seen. They only want to be seen when they want to be seen. It's like this thing right now with, this thing with Ralph Richards.
Ralph Reed. Yeah.
Maybe. You know, and this thing with Norquist. Isn't it amazing how these are the two, I think, in this whole Abramoff scandal who are really going to be the linchpins?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a photograph out there today. A Native American tribe released a photograph of them standing around with Bob Ney from Ohio after he said, well, never heard of him, never met him, wouldn't know him if they passed him on the street. Nah, never. And they, oh, yes, you did.
And here are the 8x10 glossies to show you did.
With the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one.
Well, like I say I still think that Bob Ney is going to be the next big one they go after, but I still think Norquist is the linchpin to all this. I think when they get him and turn the spigot on him, he's going to be like Niagara Falls, naming names.
Well, I hope so. I hope he can be gotten to. Luke, we gotta roll it out. We're at the top of the hour. Thanks so much.
Howdy.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye now. Our good friend Luke in Knoxville. Now, don't say Knoxville. You'll give yourself away. It's Knoxville. I'm Bob Kincaid. You're free to jump on in. Lines are open now. 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network. When they gather around and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard we go walking. Then he look into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.
This is a Quality News Network. The Supreme Court issued a ruling today that effectively allows states to redraw district lines whenever they want. The ruling came out of the controversial redistricting of Texas, which shifted more power to Republicans. However, the court also agreed that Hispanic voting rights were violated in one district. A lower court has been ordered to review that part of the case. Israelis arrested a Hamas politician today as thousands of troops and tanks moved into Gaza City, trying to force Palestinian militants to hand over an Israeli hostage. Warnings of potential epidemics and health disasters have been issued after airstrikes knocked out water, electricity, and bridges. Also today, Israeli warplanes hovered above the residence of Syria's president, saying a direct link exists between Syria and Hamas. One official says Israel wants to assassinate a hardline Hamas leader who is in exile in Syria. In Iraq, nearly a dozen Sunni insurgent groups say they will halt their attacks, but only on the condition that the U.S. military leaves Iraq within 2 years. President Nouri al-Maliki says setting a timetable for withdrawal doesn't make sense, since he doesn't know when Iraqi forces will be able to take over. In Washington, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan says the country is plagued not only by terrorism, but also drug trafficking and corruption. He says in order to ensure stability in the country, the international community must continue fighting these forces. His comments came during testimony before the House Armed Services Committee. In Washington, the Bush administration has issued new guidelines to prevent the theft of personal information on employees and civilians. Federal civilian agencies now have 45 days to implement the new measures. At Cape Canaveral, Florida, Saturday's scheduled launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery may be delayed. Officials say there's a 60% chance that storms and thick clouds will prevent the takeoff. Across the eastern seaboard, at least 9 people have died and thousands have evacuated due to flooding. Officials have declared emergencies across parts of New Jersey, New York, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. In New York, architects have unveiled the newly designed Freedom Tower. Standing at nearly 1,800 feet, it will become the tallest building in America. At the United Nations today, Montenegro became the 192nd member of the world body. That comes nearly 1 month after the country declared independence from Serbia. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Federal Reserve started the first of a two-day meeting today, which is expected to end with a 5.25% rate hike. It would be the 17th successive hike since June 2004. A new survey finds that most retirees in the U.S. will not receive health benefits from their employers. 95% of the companies surveyed say they plan to reduce that coverage over the next 5 years. Daimler Chrysler says its smart car will be available in the U.S. starting in 2008. The two-seater will be aimed at trendy urban consumers in the East and West Coasts. Honda says it will build a new $500 million assembly plant in Indiana. It's the sixth North American factory. Starting in the fall, Verizon says subscribers who cancel their service will not have to pay as much of a hefty cancellation fee. The fees will be prorated so they can match the time left on their contracts. FBI agents in the New York City area have broken up two international movie piracy rings. Bootlegging has reportedly cost the motion picture industry millions of dollars. An Iraqi oil ministry spokesman says that oil production is at its highest level, 2.5 million barrels a day, since the country was invaded in 2003. Production fell at that time because of insurgent attacks. Light sweet crude settled at $72.19 a barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 49 points, NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Right here. All right. It's time we got to the prayer. Well, and we've kind of been on it, haven't we? It's time we really get to the meat of prayer meeting tonight. And by that, I mean, some of the really sick religion industry stuff. I mentioned this in a conversation with Luke a few minutes ago. Over at CNN.com, who just can't seem to find enough wing nuts now that we all know that they're discredited, a bunch of frauds, morally bankrupt freaks. They got one of those special underwear dudes in Glenn Beck. They got Nancy Grace. They got Bingo Billy Bennett sitting there naked, eating Cheetos and pulling one-armed bandits and writing about values, morals, virtues. That's what he wrote about, virtues. Well, commentary. Media provides cover for assault on traditional marriage by James C. Dobson, special to CNN. What's he doing fooling around with the liberal media? Editor's note, James C. Dobson is founder and chairman of Focus on the Family Action. He has a Ph.D. in child development, thank God they didn't say rearing, and is author of the best-selling book, Bringing Up Boys. Here's the fun part. He is currently working on a follow-up, Bringing Up Girls. I wonder if in Bringing Up Girls he invites Daddy to take her into the shower like he does with little Sonny Boy. And Dobson writes, Dr. Dobson writes, who couldn't put a Band-Aid on somebody without killing him. On June 7th, the U.S. Senate voted for a second time on an amendment to define marriage in the U.S. Constitution as being exclusively between one man and one woman. Again this year, the amendment failed to pass by a wide margin. Rarely has there been a greater disconnect between members of the Senate and the American people who put them in power. With the help of the media, which laid down cover by claiming voters didn't care about marriage, 40 Democrats, 1 Independent, and 7 Republicans turned their backs on this most basic social institution. Let's examine the claim that traditional marriage lacks support in the court of public opinion. You bastard! James Dobson, you miserable seventh son of a syphilitic sea cook!
Matthew 25, anyone? Matthew 25. That's Matthew 25. If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. And, you know, Jim, buddy, Dobson, pal, that's got nothing to do with a couple of dudes picking out a silver service. There was another poll that the media completely ignored. In fact, there were 19 of them. They represented the 19 states in which voters overwhelmingly defined marriage as between a man and a woman. Or a woe man. No states chosen by popular vote to permit marriages between homosexuals. Support for the family has been affirmed in every instance. You see how they operate? Good God! If this guy was being schooled by Aristotle, he'd be thrown off a rock. I almost said the Tarpeian rock, but that was Roman. He'd be thrown off a rock. Support for the family doesn't equate with hating people who have sex differently than you, Dr. Dobson. Because, frankly, I imagine, no, I don't. But, you know, if you've got the stomach for it and you want to call up some image of James Dobson having sex, you're welcome to it, because I'm pretty sure it'll put you off the kibble for a week. Yee. Indeed, on the day before, 48 senators bailed on marriage. Huh? What? Meathead? The 20th state voted on its own constitutional amendment. It was Alabama, which supported traditional marriage by 81% to 19%. Well, you know, surprise! Alabama still has miscegenation and education segregation laws on the books, Dr. Dobson. That wouldn't be my... Well, you know. But CNN and the mainstream televised news networks uttered hardly a peep about the Alabama decision. Why was the issue buried? Because the poll in Alabama and 19 other states didn't match the template put forward by those who wanted the amendment to be crushed. Their bias against the family is breathtaking. Oh, you know, this is not the part of the program where I start screaming. I'm bias against the family. You hateful, evil, old dumbass. Bias against the family, if you were listening to Mr. Hornberger earlier, bias against the family happens when you, as Dobson does, support slaughtering little five-year-olds with a pair of... Can you... I mean... How damn dumb are we that it took us 2 500-pound bombs to kill a five-year-old little girl? Woo! I mean, woo! I mean, of course, we've proven also that bullets are equally effective, especially when ejected from a firearm at roughly, you know, what, 50, 60 rounds per second? I don't know. I don't know the mechanics of that. As for the senators who voted against the amendment, the excuses they gave were pitiful. Senator John McCain, Arizona. Senator Debbie Stabenow, Michigan. Senator Lincoln Chafee, Rhode Island. Senator Mark Dayton, Minnesota. Senator Limpy Snow, Maine. Senator Judd Gregg, New Hampshire. And many others thought that they had the perfect alibi. They claimed the issue should be handled at the state level. What hypocrisy. And it goes on and on and on. And at the end, what is your take on this commentary? Email us. And then there's the comments themselves. Go and just look for Dobson commentary on CNN. You can tear your own hair out. Jeez. James Dobson is right on. This is from Edmond, Oklahoma. As Bart Kopp would note, knuckle drag. James Dobson says the country wants marriage between a man and a woman and faults senators for not listening to their districts. But what if it were reversed? What if Americans did want gay marriage allowed? He'd fault the American citizens and be angry at senators for going against traditional family. Well, there's the same person in Columbus, Ohio. Here, here. First smart thing I've read in a very long time. Going to leave that one alone. That's from Kathy in Birmingham, Alabama. But it is worth remembering Brother Dobson's history a little bit here. This is from a publication out of Denver called 5280, 5280, you know, a mile.
Yeah.
This is where Dobson comes from. And, I mean, we're talking about psychopathology. We're talking about psychopathology that would just make your blood run cold if you caught it happening to a child now. A country preacher, long and thin as a summer shadow, stood at the front of a church with his arms outstretched, quietly inviting those who wanted to pray to come forward and join him. He was James Dobson Sr., a 6'4" giant with gentle eyes and a face made gaunt from ministering to impoverished rural flocks. Yeah, gaunt. Never missed a chicken dinner on Sunday in his life. Little Jimmy Dobson, who had his father's light-colored hair, stepped from his mother's side and joined the procession moving toward the altar. This is where it gets pretty sick. Weeping and crying. Weeping and crying, the 3-year-old boy knelt and asked Jesus to forgive his sins and instantly felt the overwhelming presence of God. Can you imagine parents who have so psychotically raised a child that by the time that the child is 3 years old, he is convinced he is a sinner? What kind of mental abuse must be heaped upon a child to make a 3-year-old, you know, just 2 years younger than the little baby girl that we killed with 2 500-pound bombs in Iraq? I wonder if she wept and cried because she knew she was a sinner. Or did she just weep and cry? Or did she even get a chance? James Dobson supports the slaughter of that 5-year-old little girl, and it is enough to make me punch a hole in a wall. But can you imagine tormenting a child so much? You could almost forgive Dobson for being as sick and vicious and hateful and twisted as he is for what his parents did to him. 3 years old, and you have been programmed at 3 to believe that you are a sinner? What did they do to him? How badly did they beat him? And how much does that play into the fact that this man still urges in a book that children, little children, 3-year-old children, 5-year-old children, if they haven't been dropped, haven't had a 500-pound bomb dropped on them by one of his followers, that little children be beaten until they cry real tears. That little boys be taken into the shower with their full-grown naked fathers and have their genitalia criticized and examined. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it goes on and on. You could almost forgive. You could almost forgive Dobson for being the sick, vicious, twisted monster that he is, but only almost, because that 3-year-old that thought he was a sinner thinks that all the 3-year-olds are sinners. Some of them he drops bombs on. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union,
The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Speaking of thievery,
yes,
just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right,
yes,
he died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Two past the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And, you know, I got to say, I think I'm holding up pretty good. More or less produced something on the order of 3 hours of radio. Got 3 hours more to produce. Done two and a half hours of radio. But, you know, it's so worth it. It is so worth it because I so very much cherish and treasure the opportunity to share information and share thoughts with all of you. And your thoughts as well. Rejoining us from Ventura, California, our good friend Michael Stettler. Steady, you there, buddy?
Yeah, Steady's here, and I'm on the corner of Mills and Main in Ventura, California again. Thanks for taking the call, Bob.
Oh, my pleasure. How's it going out there?
We got a different group here on a different corner, but MoveOn.org is alive and well in a couple locations today. Protesting the oil lobby in Congress and asking Elton Gallagher to represent them and not big oil money. We've got $10 billion oil industry here in Ventura, and I think that's gone up since oil's gone up from $20 a barrel. So lots of inflation, and the people are meeting out there on the street corners and starting to wave their flags and signs and say, hey, man, enough is enough. We got people on the street corner. The sun's still out in Southern California.
Sounds like you got some live ones there, Steady.
We do, man, and I just want to call in and let you know across the country that we're not taking this anymore, man. People are coming out of the street. They're bringing this off, too, if you can hear that one. Bob, you got a lot of good stuff on the show. I just wanted to update your listeners and everybody in the chat room. Love you.
Oh, we love you too, Steady. And, you know, tell. Listen, do me a favor, please. Tell your friends they're gathering to fight the good fight. Please tell them that America has another liberal network, would you?
Yes, I will. I will definitely. I'm going to get a rubber stamp for you.
All right.
I'm going to fill out all my documents.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right.
Radio Network.
Okay, cool, Steady. We sure do appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
I'd kind of like to be in Ventura right now. Remember that old America tune? Ventura Highway in the Sunshine? Of course, I don't know. I guess that's not in Ventura. See, I'm so not Californian. I got to get out there sometime. I got to see it. I want to see the whole country. And I haven't yet. I want to see the world. I want to confirm for myself that while a lot of us may be profoundly different in how we speak or how we look or how we dress, how we eat, what we eat, what we worship or don't worship, I want to confirm my fundamental belief that we're all, we're all, you know, same whole chromosome gig. We're all human. And the dog in the background. That was a dog that was angry at the oil companies. That tells you we're making progress when even the dogs are barking at big oil. Now, of course, your phone calls are plenty welcome. 877-443-2366. You know, 877, the number 4, head on. And as I requested of Steady, I will also request of you, it takes an absolute horse gag and boatload of money. Oh, mixed metaphors until thoroughly combined. To hire a paid promotions person to go out there and bring our image to the fore the way it needs to be. And it's paid, you know, it's paid for stuff, and, you know, it's people know that. It means a whole lot more if it comes from you, because it has the mark of authenticity and the mark of candor and the mark of honesty. So when you tell your friends about the horn, they know that you're sharing something sincerely and out of the honesty of your heart. And so whenever you can do that, I would sincerely appreciate it if you would. And that's as close to a fun drive or begging that we will ever get. My resistance to holding my hand out comes from a long line of watching preachers do it. And this is Wednesday night prayer meeting edition, so, you know, it's worth mentioning. I've seen, brothers and sisters, we cannot reach those poor benighted souls in darkest Africa unless you give till it hurts. For, you know, this is the time of year that we do our Lottie Moon offering. Oh, yeah. Yeah, my Baptist street cred, my Southern Baptist street cred is something fierce. Lottie Moon. Never heard of Lottie Moon? Go and reread To Kill a Mockingbird. I think there's some mention of Lottie Moon in there, maybe. Yeah, To Kill a Mockingbird. Back when Scout gets forced to put on a dress and sit around and be a lady. But I got a belly full of that garbage growing up. And I'm not about to start it now. But we do need your kind words. Those we desperately need. We need your good energies. If you're blogging somewhere and you get it, you know how it is when you enter a blog entry and this is, you know, when they ask you for your website. Do something different for a change and put down and type in the URL for headonradionetwork.com. Let people find out that we are here. Let people find out what it is that you're so excited about. Let people find out what it is that you have indeed, in fact, helped build. And then you will watch us grow. And you will say, I was there. I was part of that. I was on the horn before the horn was cool. Right? Sort of like that speech from the beginning of Patton, where George C. Scott stand in front of the big flame. Well, what did you, you know? When the little kid says, "Well, what did you do in the Second World War, Grandpa?" You won't have to say, "Well, I shoveled crap in Louisiana." You'll say, "I was there with Patton." Well, where were you when the airwaves were taken back? And you won't have to say something like, "Watching O'Reilly." You'll say, "I was there. I was there with Bob. I was there with Bruce. I was there with John, with Joe." I was there with Mark Levine. I was there with Guy James. I was there when people looked at me funny when I said horn. I was there when no one knew. And now look at it. Other liberal network? It is the liberal network. Am I dreaming? No. Is it prophecy? No. It is the rational extension of what I believe the outcome of tremendous amounts of hard work and dedication and ferocious, ferocious belief can be. So it's half past the hour. And we rather need to take a break. When we come back, your phone calls are welcome. And, you know, the trick is, sometimes Agnes is doing stuff when the phone rings, so you got to give her a chance to get to it. You know, you can't do the old, "Well, I'll let it ring five times and then I'll hang up." You got to have a little patience. Because there's a lot of stuff that gets done here. Oh, someday after the liposuction and the Botox and the dermabrasion and the eyelid lift and the all this, you know, the, you know, I get the real Hollywood plastic surgery treatment, we'll bring in a webcam, and then you really can see the flurry of activity that is any given night or day here at the Horn. Until then, no webcams. But you got to be a little bit patient. So we'll be back.
Oh, yeah.
You got about 25 minutes or so to get your last licks in. And I got a couple more stories that are well worth taking on. What this is, as I've just sort of beaten to death, is the Head On Radio Network. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Someone to hear your friend.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment, or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over $292 million, a $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Traffic. All this traffic. When will it end? Doesn't it seem like there are more cars on the road every day?
As our population continues to grow, our daily commute isn't the only thing changing. Rapid population growth around the world threatens our quality of life in other ways. It endangers the environment, economic development, even the future health of our children. U.S. support for voluntary family planning programs worldwide improves everyone's quality of life and help slow population growth. Find out how you can help increase support for these crucial programs. We're Population Action International, working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
All right. 23 minutes or so before we wrap it up for tonight. And let's go right back to the phones. First time caller, our friend Lilo, calling from Pittsburgh. Welcome to the program. Thank you for getting in touch.
Well, I listened to you and heard you talk about your dream of this network and thought I'd ask you a personal question.
Okay.
About your network, and that is, would you be as excited to have a music network or some other topic or some other genre, or is it the political scene that interests you?
Lilo, I don't necessarily look at it as exclusively political, but I think in all candor, I would have to say that no, I wouldn't be excited about doing a music thing or fashion or heaven knows celebrity gossip, because there's too much of that out there already, and frankly, it doesn't mean much to me. This means something, you know. I guess we kind of define it and talk about it in terms of politics. But that's so not what it's all about. This is about reclaiming the culture.
True.
Politics is something that's seedy and kind of sleazy and in many ways beyond the pale, as far as I'm concerned, in the first part of the 21st century. But if you talk about it in terms of saving the culture, it means so much more.
Yes, that is true. That was the second reason I was calling in, because I thought your network was so very important for the culture and to be part of speaking up about all the bad things that are going on right now, economically, socially, politically, and so on. As you can tell by my accent, I'm not from the United States. I'd rather come from a country that has a pretty bad history. And I remember as a teenager or even younger, accusing my grandparents and saying, why did you not speak up? And
well, so what kind of answer did you get?
As a matter of fact, they did in the very beginning when discussion was still possible or when they thought it was still possible. But you would be punished in small ways. My grandfather, for example, was the principal of a school, and he was demoted. My uncle lost his job at the bank, and during the 20s, it was very difficult to find another job. So they stopped speaking around my mother, who was the little one and very outspoken, because they could not afford her to blabber whatever political discussions they had.
Sure.
So, and then everyone was busy with themselves, and they were afraid. I don't blame them for being afraid.
No, they were. It was very serious, and I'm making some assumptions about the country.
Right.
But you could disappear and be dead in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So I think your network and what you are saying is very important. That we are doing that so that we can speak out, or that we do it while we still can speak out. And I'm listening to you and calling in so that we promote that.
Well, thank you so very much, and thank you for adding that perspective, because we haven't gotten to the part, well, at least most of America has not gotten to the part yet where they take you away. Now, there is plenty. I mean, you mentioned your grandfather being demoted.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening in this country.
Oh, yes.
But they haven't gotten to the part about the camps yet. I think they would like to. We have a chance yet. It may be we may have another year. We may have another 6 months. I don't know. We have a chance to stop this before it can get to the point that it got where your grandparents were. And, you know, if this network can help do that, I pray God that we can succeed. You know, not just for me, but because there are children who ask who will ask questions just as you asked when you were little.
Correct.
And we have to be in the position to give the right answer.
Exactly. And I, my daughter is 24, and I keep telling her, I want to be on record. I said something, I did something. I want you to know that, I want you to see that, I want you to work with me. That you won't be doing what I did to my grandparents. I leave out my parents because they were really too young. So I excuse them, so at least partially.
Well, I don't think you can do anything, but it's the children that we make this effort for.
Correct.
I was going to ask you, with the perspective that you do have, is this as frightening to you as it appears to me and many like me who don't share the cultural perspective that you have?
Yes, it is. I do not like having to keep my mouth shut in order to save my husband's job, for example, at certain functions, or not to say something at my job because I need it. That is already very frightening to me, and I can see how very quickly it can turn around. If you take, for example, just imagine this fear we have right now, together with a Joe McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph, wasn't it? Yeah. And put them together, and you can see what could happen.
Or a J. Edgar Hoover and the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the makings of cold chills.
Right, right. So, yes, I think it is very frightening, especially when I see the apathy of the general electorate. And
most of the general electorate won't come out for the election.
That is true. They won't read a newspaper other than the sports page.
Precisely, precisely. I had a conversation with, and it didn't have so much to do with the radio show as it did a paper that my daughter was working on. My wife found the author of the book Escape from Sobibor.
Uh-huh.
And we had a chat with him.
Uh-huh.
And he said basically that, you know, he tried to avoid politics, but he said he couldn't avoid certain comparisons with what he had already seen happen.
Yeah. It is. I did not, obviously, I'm too young to have lived through it. I was born quite a few years after the war, but I suffered the consequences of war and suffered the consequences of a culture doing what Germany did. And I would, and my daughter has too, because having a mother like me with an accent like me, she got, she received some remarks in school also. So I wouldn't want other children or other people to have to carry along that burden also.
But that's the thing, you know, you talk about the burden of the German people.
Mm-hmm.
At least they have had, in large part, they have had the fortitude, and it takes fortitude,
mm-hmm.
to own up to it.
Right.
In the World Cup stuff, I don't know if you followed this or not, Lilo, German nationalism has really reared its ugly head.
Oh, yes.
And frankly, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying to see out of the German people.
I can understand that. I was invited to speak to a lot of groups in 1989,
mm-hmm.
and I was continuously asked whether a united Germany would ever become militant again. And it took me back a little bit, because I don't consider myself a militant, or the people I grew up with and worked with and was educated with, and so on. As a matter of fact, there were probably more peaceful people than I met here. But I can understand the fear other countries would have with Germany's history, yes.
Well, you know, but as I noted, Germany did own up to it,
mm-hmm.
and acknowledged it, and is to this day is trying to deal with it. The thing that America faces, and especially because of this, the information contained in this book by David Rose, the gentleman I interviewed at the beginning of the program, Guantanamo, the War on Human Rights.
Oh.
We already have things that sooner or later we're going to have to deal with, and we're going to have,
yep.
to own up to them, just like the German people did.
Right.
There, you know, thousands, literally thousands of people after 9/11 were rounded up for no other reason than the fact that they were Muslim or looked Muslim,
mm-hmm.
and without recourse to lawyer, family,
right.
nothing.
Right.
And that is that's I think you would probably agree is the first step down a road that the German people trod,
mm-hmm.
and pray God never to tread again.
Yeah.
And yet here we are walking it.
Right, right.
And we will have to do our penance just as the
right.
German people did, just
right.
as the Japanese have done for Nanking and Shanghai and places like that.
Right, right. Oh, as far as the World Cup is concerned, my perspective is, and I hope I'm right, that the World Cup is all about nationalism. Soccer is a world sport, and the players are traded throughout the countries and so on. And there's one instance when there are national teams, and that is during the World Cup. Well, maybe the Euro Cup, but no, those are teams also.
So if it is going to become publicly visible, it would almost be expected to see it then.
So, and I hope I'm right. I hope I'm not making light of it. So
I don't think you are. I think that theory at least holds a little bit of water. It doesn't change some of the ugliness that has gone on. I know there was one African American sports writer broadcaster who openly said, "I was going to go over. I don't think so now because I don't feel safe."
Oh my! My sister had just returned from a trip just a day or two before it started, and she said the Germans were. You could see it, read it in the papers. They were worried about not terrorism or any violence connected with terrorism, but that the soccer players would misbehave. Not the players, I'm sorry, the fans would misbehave.
Yeah, hooliganism.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that security was extremely tight because of that. But, I guess I can understand that once you have trod that path, you are always under suspicion. It'll take a long time to forget that. Or not to bring the seed is there. Let's say.
Right, or not to prejudice the attempt. And the sad thing is we haven't begun that dialogue. And frankly, if you want something equally scary, this question of the Iraqis government extending amnesty to people who have opposed our occupation, and we've got people screaming, "No, no! How could they possibly do that?" It's the only way they'll ever have peace inside their own country.
It's a sign that a war has ended. If it is a war, I mean, we are not calling it a war, but that armed conflict has ended when the arms are laid down and amnesty is granted to the soldiers.
Well, I think you're right, Lilo. I'm so pleased that you called. I hope we will hear from you again.
I will call again, Bob.
All right, thank you very much, and have a wonderful evening.
You do too. Thank you.
Bye now. And I ended the call only because we're at the end of the program, and at some point I think we do have to have a discussion about this the amnesty issue in Iraq. It's galling, and I know it is galling to people on the left and the right that the Iraqi government might extend amnesty to people who have blown up American soldiers. But just as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa extended amnesties to people who had been involved in necklacings, and you know what that is. It was what was required for that nation to heal. And we're not talking that because I remain convinced of what I said the other night. The United States cannot be involved in anything remotely associated with the healing of Iraq because we were the disease. Saddam wasn't the disease. We became the disease. We removed Saddam. They had an opportunity to have their own government, but we wouldn't let them. And as was pointed out, you know, there was going to be Alawi. Or Chalabi, you know, we were going to pick their government for them. But if you're going to preach democracy, you better be ready and willing to live the results thereof. And unless we just expect Iraq to break down into wholesale civil war and hopeless bloodshed. You know, one of the reasons we can't, you know, just exit Iraq is the fact, it'll be chaos. They'll fall apart. There'll be bloodshed. Well, there's already bloodshed. There's already chaos. But once we are gone, they have a chance to heal. And I don't think they're going to heal if what passes for a government there is busy tracking down people who fought Americans. We had our own amnesty following the Civil War. Everyone else got their, everyone except just about, what, Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee got their American citizenship back. We can't be hypocrites about this. Thank you, everyone who participated in the program. It is why we do you, it. You are why we do this. The show tonight, of course, was ably produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. My darling wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. You know, electrons jump when he says froggy. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of every single program on the Head On Radio Network. He's got a fundraiser going on right now. And I have no compunction whatsoever against encouraging you to do the right thing by Ben. Because he does it for all the right reasons, and he is not pushy or beggy about asking for your support. It's up to you, and he's not going to take the service away from you. It's all done on the honor system, you see. John Fox, who follows me in just a matter of minutes, with All Foxed Up, is also the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. And we certainly do appreciate every little thing that he does. He's our webmaster, too, for headonradionetwork.com. You enjoy the chat room? Shoot John a note and thank him for his hard work. This show and every show on the horn is sponsored and brought to you by the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They get up every day, they build the American dream by supporting the growth and rise of the horn. They're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.